This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association of Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wild lands of the West and all across America. I'm your host, Jay Shell. Today, we are interviewing Bill Watkins. He's a photographer and tundra wilderness tour guide for the park concessionaire in Denali National Park up there in Alaska. So welcome. Welcome, Bill. It's good to be talking to you. And we're going to find out about wolves in Denali. So thanks for doing this.
Yeah, you're very welcome, Jay, and I really appreciate you spending some time with me.
So what do you do as a professional tour guide?
Okay, so as a tour guide, I take up to 52 people into the park, and then give them a narrated tour of Denali. And then my own tour, each driver develops their own tour, which also has to meet company and also NPCS standards. So each tour that anybody takes is going to be different.
And how long have you been doing that, and how did you get started?
Between the two systems that I've driven in, the first one was the shuttle system, which I started in 1989, and then I did that for 16 and a half years, and I transferred over to tour in 2006, and so I've been doing that for 17 years. So between the two systems, I've driven for the past 33 and a half years in Denali.
And do you, by leading a tour, does that mean you get out and hike, or you snowshoe, or what do?
Okay, so this is tour by bus. So we do get out for rest stops and some scenic stops, but the tour is itself. And so as we're traveling through the park, heading to the East Fork River, which is 43 miles in the park, I'll be giving this narrated tour, and it's interspersed with quiet times as well. And then, of course, you know, we make our turnaround and then head eastbound to the park entrance area.
So you go 43 miles into the park at, what, the Piety Rocks landslide? Is that it?
Well, so Pretty Rocks is at mile 45. And it's a high cliff area of the park, and they're currently in the process of building a bridge over this landslide area.
Uh-huh.
A 475-foot bridge, I believe. And so we actually turn around at the East Fork Bridge, which is at mile 43.
Uh-huh. Well, there's a community over there called Kantishna, right? At the end of the road, and it got cut off by the landslide?
Right. So Kantishna is at mile 92, and there are four privately owned lodges out there. The Kantishna Roadhouse, the Denali Backcountry Lodge, Denali, and then North Face Lodge. And I think North Face hasn't been in operation over recent years, but the other three are still in operation as fly-in lodges.
Oh, they're fly-in lodges. I see.
Well, because the road's cut off,
right?
That's the only way they can get their visitors.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I was wondering how they got past the landslide, where they had to evacuate. So that's at the Teklanike River, is that right?
Well, no. Kantishna's at mile 92, and then the Teklanike River's at mile 30.
Oh, I see. Okay. I got as far as the river, I guess, and on the tour I was on, and we turned around there. But that was great country. So describe the park to me. There are, what, two regions, the eastern region and the western region, or what's the geographical description of the park?
Well, the geographical description of the park is these very open, glacially carved valleys is what we primarily go through. And so we go through different kinds of habitats, everything from forested areas, which are referred to as taiga, to ecotone areas, which are transitional areas between taiga and tundra. Then we go through subalpine tundra, and then we also go through alpine tundra. And so we're kind of going back and forth between all these areas of the park, you know, as we're heading out to the East Fork River at mile 43.
And so you get tra- training, is that right, to do the tour guiding?
We do, and actually our training is very extensive. It's about 10 to 14 days, which everyone has to go through, regardless of their seniority, and it's going to cover a number of different topics, or you know, everything from working with buses on the cone courses, to classroom work, to mechanical orientation, to chain up, you know, to working with wheelchairs and, you know, getting them secured in the bus, to East End training. So, and then also going over, you know, how to safely drive in the park in a classroom setting for each individual position. So we have four different positions in the park. That's everything from Thunder Wilderness Tour to the Denali Natural History Tour to the transportation system, and then we also have the front country or courtesy system transports people in the eastern end of the park.
Does the Park Service do the training?
Generally, we have one, maybe two Park Service resource days, where that's generally in a classroom setting, or we it may be part classroom and then part field trips going into the park. That'll cover like a variety of different topics, but one is always going to be discussing Pretty Rocks and that situation, road conditions that may come up or that we need to be concerned with and aware with, updating us on wildlife, generally the Big Five or some of the Big Five, to very possibly they'll probably be talking about, oh, there was a new trail in day use area that was recently built over by the Nenana River across from the Denali Village, which is on the south end, meaning it's about 7 miles from the park entrance area to the south. So that we'll probably get updated on that. And then we're also undergoing a spruce bark beetle infestation, which attacks and kills mature spruce trees. So, you know, there could be an update on what's going on with that as well.
What caused the landslide at Pretty Rocks?
Global climate change. Because underneath Pretty Rocks, if you go down about 20 feet when the road used to exist there, it hit a layer that's about 80 to 90 feet thick, if I remember correctly. And so over the years, Pretty Rocks would be, that area would be slumping as the ice melted. And then this would force Park Service to, you know, fill it in. And as the years went by, the melt and the drop in Pretty Rocks was increasing dramatically, until they could no longer keep up with it, and they finally had to close the road down for safety consideration. In fact, there's a whole Park Service webpage devoted to Pretty Rocks on the Denali National Park website, and that's nps.gov/DENA, D-E-N-A. Or you can just do a Google search for Pretty Rocks in Denali, and it'll bring it right back up.
I see. Well, let's talk about what you're looking for. I assume your primary interest is wolves, is that right?
Well, wolves and grizzlies, you know, I enjoy all the wildlife that we see, but because of the Big Five, wolves are the hardest to find, and now they are, the chances of seeing wolves in Denali, unfortunately, is almost non-existent now.
Really?
I mean, there's still a chance, but it's not a good chance by any means. And this has really been the case going all the way back to 2012. That's when the breeding female and primary tenant female of Grant Creek was baited and killed outside the park. And Grant Creek had been denning from about 2004 to 2011 with a couple of off years west of the Toklat River, about a quarter mile from the road. And so this would provide visitors unparalleled opportunities to see wolves, not just in the distance, you know, 1 mile or 2 miles away, but also up close from the tundra, or actually as they utilize the park road, sometimes going right by the bus. And also beginning late June, early July, we would have the opportunity to see wolf pups as they would come up to the road. And so we hardly ever get a chance to see wolf pups. And it's incredibly rare to have a den site close to the park road where visitors can see the comings and goings of wolves like this. And quite simply, it was the best wolf viewing in my 36 years in Denali.
Oh, wow.
And also the most consistent wolf viewing in my 36 years in Denali. And then in 2012, when that trapper killed the breeding female of Grant Creek, Well, that caused massive disruption within the family group. They went from 15 wolves to 5 to 3 within a year. It caused territorial shifting. They moved their den site. They no longer use the park road, hardly at all. It also changed travel and hunting habits as well. And consequently, we've hardly seen Grant Creek since that time. Oh. And it hasn't recovered. Now, we did have an exception in 2018. Riley Creek West, this is another family group, they located their rendezvous sites in the area that Grant Creek had been denning. And so that year, 2018, yes, that was a good wolf year for seeing wolf pups and the two adults. There's only two adults in that family group. But Riley Creek West did not survive that winter due to natural causes. And then in 2019, wolf viewing nosedived down to 1% for visitors. In 2022, it also nosedived to 1%. And so it's never recovered since its 2010 peak, where wolf viewing was at 45% in Denali. And those were typically high quality, meaning close sightings for a lot of them.
Right. So the National Park Service does regular censuses or population counts in the park?
They do a spring count, which counts the adults. This is generally before the new pups are born.
Uh-huh.
Certainly, well before they'd be out of the den. So it only counts the adults. And then in the fall, they will do another count, which counts the adults and the pups. And so, actually, one of the things, and they just recently updated the population data on their website, and usually the spring count is less than the fall count. Because usually, over the course of the winter, dispersal of wolves takes place and or natural. Well, this year, it was actually, or I guess I should say, fall count of 2023 was at 59 compared to the spring count of 2023 of 81. And usually that's not the case. And so I don't have a causation just yet coming from Park Service, but I would speculate that what's causing that decrease was there's probably very little, if any, pup recruitment into the population in the spring of 2023. And then because there were no pups or a few pups, that, pups kind of anchor the wolves to the den site. Well, if there are no pups, there's nothing anchoring them there. And there's probably some dispersal that took place, and or maybe mortality that took place. So that would be Bridget Board in our NPS resource day as to, whether Park Service has determined what caused that.
So how reliable or accurate are those counts? Are they pretty close to what's really there?
Yeah, so Park Service tries to radio collar two members out of each wolf family group. And that's typically the breeding male and female. And then because those two wolves are collared and, the rest of the family members are typically their offspring from previous and or the current year, that enables them to track them again in the spring, do those counts, and then also in the fall as well as do those counts. Now, there could be some family groups on the wolves that are on the very edges of the park, or maybe they spend very little time in the park that Park Service isn't accounting for, things like that. But for the most part, I think it's a good accounting of what we have in Denali.
You sent me some websites that I could where I could access the territorial maps showing those wolf counts for both spring and fall. Is the public able to access those maps?
They can. In fact, if anybody wants to tap into the March 2023 map. Just do a Google, probably this is going to be the easiest way, do a Google search for Denali Wool Spring 2023 population map, and that should bring it up,
okay.
or some variation of that.
Okay, that's good. They make, when you say spring count, what month is that? Is the spring count done in?
Spring count is probably, this is something you have to double check with Bridget, It's probably going to be in March or April.
Oh, really? That's early. You still got snow on the ground, don't you?
Well, yeah, more than likely there is snow on the ground, but that's also going to help make the wolves, you know, stand out against the snow.
Well, so mortality occurs in the wintertime. That's the heaviest mortality period, right?
Well, mortality can occur at any time. If you're talking natural mortality, kind of keep in mind that, you know, to be a wolf is leading a life of high risk, you know, because you're typically preying on larger species that are typically larger and stronger than you are. So in Denali, that's going to be moose, which is going to be the most formidable prey species. And so our cow moose will range away from about 800 up to 1,000 pounds. Bulls may range up to 1,600, 1,700, maybe as high as 1,800 pounds. And then we also have caribou, which will range away from, you know, the bulls will probably run about 450, 500 pounds. And then we also have Dall sheep, which are, you know, the rams will probably top out close to 225 or so. And, of course, Dall sheep are going to be these mountainous areas with various things like that, which can entail a lot of risk for wolves, and, you know, and trying to prey on them. Because, you know, the sheep can go and get into places where the wolf can't go.
Right. Well, I noticed that when I looked at that material, I noticed that the moose are by far and away the greatest source of kills that the wolves prey on.
Well, actually, I agree with that. So Dr. Gordon Haber found that typically wolves against moose about 5% of the time. So there's going to be park that may favor different kinds of species. So, like for instance, East Fork, when they were in existence, Gordon typically talked about how they became specialists in preying on Dall sheep. Now, there was certainly caribou in the area of their territory, and probably to a lesser extent on moose. And then those wolves that would be on primarily the eastern part of the park would probably be preying more on moose, and probably caribou as well, but maybe to a little bit lesser extent. So, you know, there's going to be some variability depending on which family group is where in the park and what prey species they have, you know, easier access to. And then during the winter months, the Denali caribou herd, for instance, migrates into adjacent state lands called the Wolf Townships, which is just north of the park.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Gordon, and this has been recognized for decades as critical habitat for the caribou herd, because the wolves travel there to access this caribou herd. And this attracts wolves not only from the eastern part of Denali, but also from the far western portions of the park as well. And so Gordon reported that, you know, wolves travel up to 90 miles, various family groups, to access the wolf townships. And ironically, the caribou herd is protected there, but the wolves are not. And there's been a huge impact because of this to not only the wolves themselves, but to visitor viewing of wolves.
The 2022 report said that 33 moose were killed by wolves, as opposed to 12 caribou and one Dall sheep. Then the wolves themselves are subject to mortalities. And I noticed that in 2022, there were, what, 4 wolves killed by other wolves? What's going on there?
Well, so one of the common forms of natural mortality among wolves is this wolf-to-wolf conflict. So wolves are territorial, and that simply means, you know, they designate their territory, they scent mark it, and then they defend it from other wolves that's beyond their territory.
Oh, I see.
And so if they catch an intruding wolf, they may either drive it out or they may kill it.
Oh, I see.
So territorial conflicts between wolves, that's one of the more common forms of their mortality. And then, you know, again, if they're attempting to prey on these larger animals, it's not unusual for them to be injured, and you know, certainly if they're taking on moose, you know, even potentially killed, as moose can lash out with all four of those hooves. And again, they're huge animals in that regard. And so, but also preying on caribou, that has its risk, and preying on sheep as well has its risk. But moose would certainly be their most formidable prey.
Right. Then there are the 2022 report said that two wolves were illegally harvested. That means there are people going in the wintertime and illegally shooting or killing wolves in some way?
Well, if they're illegally harvested, I mean, harvested means killed. And so if it's illegal in the park, that must have... Alaska has very liberalized hunting and trapping regulations when it comes to wolves. So when wolves go outside the park, which is what happens with the wolf townships, they can be killed either by being trapped, snared, or hunted in that area. In fact, and one thing, it doesn't take a lot of people to cause a massive amount of damage. In fact, it only takes one knowledgeable trapper to create massive damage within these wolf family groups. In fact, that's what we've seen as the trapper that killed the breeding female of Grant Creek in 2012. Well, he also killed the breeding female of East Fork back in 2005. And we saw similar types of disruption that happened to East Fork back in 2005. And East Fork was our primary family group, and actually was the most studied family group back to Adolf Murie's landmark of 1939 to 1941.
Uh-huh.
And so, and then they were finally lost in 2016 when the breeding male was shot at a bear bait station in the Wolf Township. And the breeding female, which wasn't collared at the time, dispersed into the Alaska wilderness. And that put an end to Denali's most, longest family group of wolves that we had, from a generational standpoint, that is.
But hunting and trapping are both illegal inside the park boundary, isn't that true?
It is illegal in the original park. So now it's kind of divided up into three different sections. So you have the original park, which makes up 2 million acres.
Yeah.
Then in 1980, the 4 million acres of what was called Preserve and New Additions were added on under the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, which is called ANILCA. Well, part of a compromise to allow to pass ANILCA was to allow subsistence hunting and trapping and limited continue in these 4 million acres. And so, consequently, in the preserve, the trapping of wolves is unlimited for hunters beginning on August 1st or August 10th, depending on which game management unit is intersecting with the preserve or new additions. Up to 10 wolves can be killed by an individual hunter, and hunting season begins as early as August 1st or August 10th, and that's when wolf pelts are worthless. The pups are highly dependent on the adults because they're utilized in rendezvous sites as well. And so if you're looking at, absolutely no hunting or trapping that's taking place, that's only in the 2 million acres of original park of Denali.
Oh, I see.
All 4 million acres.
Are there any restraints on the type of trapping that may be done or the type of hunting or the season of hunting that can be effectuated?
Well, as far as the preserve goes, both trapping and snaring can take place. Usually, trapping season on state lands begins right around November 1st. It might start as early as October 15th or so. And this does allow for the use of saturation snaring. That's where you're literally saturating an area with snares, to try to maximize, the take of whatever animal that may step into those snares. And by the way, this isn't just included targeted wildlife such as wolves, coyotes, lynx, or fox. It can also include non-targeted species such as moose, caribou, or anything else that steps into them, including pet dogs. It doesn't necessarily have to be that area, but other areas where, dog owners may take their dogs are more likely to take their dogs.
Uh-huh.
And there's no mandatory time to check traps, meaning a trapper can set their trap or snare beginning on November 1st and not check it until April 30th.
There are no time constraints?
There's no time constraints.
Can cyanide bombs be used in Alaska or in any part of the park or preserve?
No. Now, I'm not aware of any poisoning is allowed in Alaska. And it certainly wouldn't be allowed in the preserve or new additions. Now, one thing that does cover the preserve and new additions is that the hunting and trapping that does take place there, it cannot threaten the wildlife populations, and nor can it favor one species over another. In other words, you cannot depress predator populations from moose and caribou populations. It's a naturally regulated ecosystem, and so the hunting and trapping cannot threaten that.
What are the effects of climate change that you're seeing in the park? What animal populations are being affected? And I assume the glaciers are in retreat.
Yeah, the smaller glaciers that we typically see from the park road, those definitely are in retreat. And that's been pretty obvious, especially working there over the years. As far as impact to wildlife, definitely Dall sheep are being impacted. Caribou, as far as currently in the park, I don't think Park Service has made any determination whether climate change has impacted caribou in Denali. Now, in the Mulchatna area of the state, which is in the southwestern portions of the state, they have determined that climate change impacts to the habitat is one of the limiting factors that caused the Mulchatna caribou herd to go from 200,000 down to about 12,000, because, and also lichen and mosses, which are really important foods for caribou, especially in the wintertime, are very slow growing and can take decades to recover. So it looks like climate change impacts on caribou are a very real possibility, especially with Mulchatna and other caribou herds within the state. And then also overhunting of that particular caribou herd took place as well. And so that was kind of what was and also disease factors, too. I think there's brucellosis that was going through that herd as well. And so you had all these various factors that were impacting that particular caribou herd.
Mm. Well, Bill, I'm afraid we are out of time, but I sure appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. I assume that you're having a great time up there in Denali and enjoying checking out all the wildlife. So thank you very much.
Well, I am. Yeah, and you know, certainly thank you for the opportunity of talking with you.
Okay, our guest today has been Bill Watkins. He's a photographer, and he works as a tundra wilderness tour guide up there in Denali. So thanks very much for listening. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to kgvm.org and see additional features and additional interviews. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jay Schell.